Hot round! Red 7, Red 7, Red 7! Don!
What?
Red 7!
I don't know what Red 7 means.
Hot round!
I don't. What is hot round?
Will you just go stand on the other side, please?
Billy Bob! This is it! The man who got us here, you ready?
You don't think that lame ass play where I run downfield and act like I'm lost is gonna work, do you?
Then he pivots, fakes, chucks the big bomb halfway down the field to our hopefully still wide open tailback. I call it the annexation of Puerto Rico.
Booyah! That's what we call a sack lunch. Nom, 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 nom.
I need that ball. Get me the ball.
You need the ball.
Get me the ball.
Get you the ball.
Are you going to get me the
ball? I'll get you the ball. I
hope he doesn't kill somebody.
When we add up all those inches, that's gonna make the difference between winning and losing. Between living and dying.
I got a whole lot of money. Y'all it for me. Bottle keep popping that water, man.
Welcome into 11 Personnel, episode 152. I'm Nick Roush. He is Adam Luckett. And as somebody said at Churchill Downs Thursday night, they said, "Hey, I've heard that voice somewhere before. That's on Adam Luckett's podcast." So, you, Luckett, this is officially your podcast now.
I'm sorry, Roush. Well, I go on your radio show, so I welcome you on my podcast. So there, returning the favor.
And that's what I get for running into a St. X Tiger. You know, they're biased, they're homers. But hey, they're not getting, we don't need to get into the recruiting stuff. We're kind of dorks out there crying about recruiting all over the state. We're here to talk football recruiting though, because the live period is not over, but it kind of feels like things are wound down for Kentucky. I'm sure they're going to have a few unofficial guys here and there, but the big stuff's over with.
Yeah, we don't, I don't know if you've heard or not, but I don't assume they're having any this weekend.
What
you see in a lot of these, Nick, like these staffs, they pick their weekend or two and have like big blowouts, and you got kind of the blue bloods that do maybe three. Like this weekend, you've got like Florida State's having a big weekend. They're having eight guys. Two Kentucky targets are down there. You've got some other North Carolina, I think, is having a big weekend. Miami's, their big recruiting weekend is this weekend. They've got like 18 guys or something, I believe, down there for their big. They had some name, and then their biggest camp is on Sunday, so they kind of combine it all. But Kentucky had their two weekends prior. They had two big recruiting weekends. I think it was 16 guys total. They split it up, like 8 and 8 or somewhere along those lines. And you saw Louisville, they really only did one big official visit weekend. They really had – they had some guys, some random guys come in, but mainly it was one big one. So Kentucky's kind of – They've played their serve, right? And so the June's over, and now we're getting into July. And historically, July is the month outside of really up the month leading into signing day. July is when you get the most commitments. 4th of July weekend historically is a huge commitment weekend. A lot of these kids want to get it done before their senior season starts, before their school year starts. So they, and especially since they moved to where you can take OVs in the summer, that's even enhanced, I think, in the last few years. And so Kentucky, my overall thoughts with the class.
I've got a game I want to play with this. Okay. Because we talked about it at length. May, it was very quiet. We weren't really sure what the month of June was going to bring. So this is going to be like, pardon the interruption. So in PTI, they have the fill in the blank game. And so I want to play the fill in the blank game with Adam Luckett. How do Kentucky's football recruiting class after the month of June is bring,
is a little bit behind, but I think that's okay.
Okay.
But they are behind. I don't think there's any denying that. And then you look at two – I think the two big ones going into this cycle, Nick, that you thought – that you felt pretty good about getting were Christian Conyer and Anthony Brown. Two big guys on your board. Conyer decides July 3rd We think, I think Kentucky's in the driver's seat right now, but you don't know.
Yep.
And then Brown has just announced his top five. It's seeming like he's extending into the season,
which isn't great.
If you look at the writing on the wall, he got that late Oklahoma offer right before, at the end of May. It's that, this smells like he went visits to UC and Kentucky. It smells like he's maybe waiting for a bigger offer. And so if you're Kentucky, the good thing here is he's just outside of Dayton in Springfield. So he can, you can get him on campus pretty easy for an unofficial.
Right.
The bad news is you burned your OV. So you don't have that in your back pocket to use to close him late. And so that's a little bit concerning there. And he was like, Emil Wagner was the ultimate Keontae Goodwin insurance last year.
Right.
Anthony Brown was the insurance if you lost Carmelo English.
Yes, who is visiting Michigan this weekend, went to Auburn. That one feels kind of like Jacoby Albert, where UK kind of did a lot. And then
the only worry is they saved that OV for Kobe Albert, and they got him on campus. They don't have that. They burned through it.
Yeah.
So I wonder if maybe if they could go and do it again if they wouldn't have
waited for the English.
That maybe they could, maybe they could have got him on campus for an unofficial, but you don't know. I mean, I don't know the specifics there.
Because I do think there's a good chance for, you know, when Brian Harsin gets fired for going 6-6, that Kentucky is right there waiting, but not having that OV does stink. I think if I was going to use a word like it, I would use the word optimistic, but subject to change, because really what we saw in June is, even though, you know, Kentucky, they aren't using the pay for play in nil to land a bunch of recruits, but they've teed up they got a lot of guys on campus, a lot of four-star talent where you weren't sure about the names here and there. I mean, there were 5 four-star linebackers within 10 days on campus. There were 5 four-star cornerbacks. Like they got a lot of guys on campus. And if you can hit on half of them, same thing with your receiver positions. Like they've done a really good job of, I thought they got a lot of guys on campus. You just got to hit. And that's where now we're kind of in the wait and see time, you know, like, so you feel like you're in a good spot, but is it good enough to beat out a lot of SEC schools? That's who your competition is now. A lot of the competition, instead of playing it, going up against Cincinnati in Ohio, which was really a thorn in this cycle. You're going up against South Carolina for guys like Jaden Robinson, and you're going up against Auburn for a couple, 2 or 3 different guys. So now it's a matter of how many of these can you close? And that's like getting guys on a campus is important, but you still got to close.
Yeah. With Carmelo English, I think they've done a great job recruiting him. I'd actually like that it was only a midweek OV to Auburn instead of one of their big weekends. They got Carmelo English here for a big weekend. You look at Carmelo English social media, it's a lot of Kentucky stuff.
Right. Right.
A lot more than Auburn. I think if you dig in his high school, Phoenix City Central, there's some stuff there about maybe the coaches there don't love Auburn and all the instability and all that stuff. So I think that plays in Kentucky's favor. But then again, he's the same reason, like, you would like Christian Conyer in the Kentucky recruitment is the same reason you should like Auburn in the Carmelo English recruitment.
Proximity.
In-state, huge target. They don't want him to get away to an SEC school. And so, but like you said, it's a guy, if they lose him, keep him warm, keep him on the radar. He's a guy you could potentially maybe flip late. But I do want to mention the defensive targets. Like, they've done a really good job, I think, on defense. Like, these are all guys, Nick, I think they have a great shot at getting. Neil Avery, top 250 edge out of the DMV.
Yep.
Avery Stewart, a top 250 defensive back out of Montgomery, Alabama. It's probably, I think he had a top 6. He only took OVs to Kentucky, Florida State. Not sure on the decision process there, but they're firmly in the hunt. Grant Godfrey.
That's
top 200 linebacker from Atlanta. Kentucky got him on campus for an unofficial.
Seems like saved Kentucky, the official for later. Right. That's big.
Kentucky, Tennessee, Wake Forest. So for this one, you're really going to watch kind of Tennessee's linebacker recruiting there. Because you think Kentucky's got a pretty good chance to beat out Wake Forest, but I think Collins done a really good job with him. So he's a guy to watch. And then Kendrick Gilbert, Just took an OV to Kentucky last weekend, a defensive lineman out of Indianapolis Cathedral. This guy, 6'5", 6'11", wingspan. He could play multiple spots in that kind of 3-4 hybrid front that Kentucky has. He would be very, very intriguing as a player if you can get him in here. Took OV's LSU. Now he's at Iowa. But I think Kentucky's in pretty good position there. So he's probably going to announce in July, and I like Kentucky chances there with him. So you look at all those guys.
Pretty significant going up. I mean, he's been to LSU 3-4 times, you know.
Well, there was Brian Kelly's staff and the guys he brought with him from Notre Dame. They were recruiting hard at Notre Dame. They went to LSU. Gotcha. Continued. But I think Kentucky's in a pretty good spot there. So if you can get a good chunk of those guys defensively, and then add Conyer to that, if you can hold on to him. Defensively, I think you're in a pretty good spot for the class, and that's a pretty good backbone heading into the season. But they just need some buzz. They don't have much buzz right now. Jermaine Matthews just listed top six, I believe. Kentucky didn't make the cut.
Mm-hmm.
Long term, that's not a really big deal because Ohio State came on. He's going to Ohio State.
Right.
And so, like, that is what it is. Orion Fisher, Georgetown, Great Crossing. He's got an OB to West Virginia this week. And that feels like a place he could land.
Mm-hmm.
Kentucky seems like backing off on that. And there's other guys too, like Wu Spencer out of Mill is a guy I think they really like. If the grades can get cleared up, I think that's the issue right now with that recruitment.
Mm-hmm. Pretty wild the Mill kids leaving Mill. You had Jeremiah Collins, who's committed to Louisville. He's now playing for a school in Tennessee.
Yep, Murfreesboro, Oakland. Yeah, that's a pipeline of they always got some D1 prospects coming out of there.
Think UK might try to flip that one. You know, I mean, we'll see. But
yeah, I mean, if you miss Conyer, if you miss on Conyer, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think that becomes a pretty big recruitment for Kentucky, trying to get him flipped. I would imagine.
Yeah.
And then Robert Stafford's obviously the big fish there at cornerback. He's at Arkansas this weekend. That's just going to be tough. I think, like, if you kind of dig into that, Arkansas should be considered the favorite there. And then, but it's Florida recruit. I mean, that thing could go 800 different directions.
right.
Like, they're not in a terrible, terrible spot. But it just feels like they're a little bit behind, right?
Yeah. And you can catch up if you get two or three or four commitments in July. You know, like they just didn't get any of these quick pops.
It's really, you really want to revisit this in July, see where they stand, how many commitments they get, what kind of prospects they get. Because there's going to be guys that have come from off the board, like the Stanquan Clark, another linebacker, Nick, ranks just outside the top 300 from Miami. It's NC State and Kentucky. That's the two places he OV'd.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a midweek OV for Kentucky. We'll see where that lands. That's Mike Snoops recruit.
Did we ever figure out if that was official or not?
I'm pretty sure it was, yeah.
Okay.
I haven't figured that out 100%, but I think it was. He's another kid similar to Sean Tompkins where it's just not much on social media.
Right.
There's not much out there on him.
Mm-hmm. But to step back even more so, I know there's a lot of – like, even though it's a little behind, Kentucky's not in the worst spot, but it feels even further behind – For some fans who just follow recruiting from afar and are seeing what the University of Louisville is doing. And we've talked about it ad nauseum. We don't need to repeat ourselves that, you know, Steve Clarkson and Adidas, but getting Reuben Owens was just the most significant feather added to their cap so far this offseason. But that doesn't mean that Kentucky is even further behind because Reuben Owens made that commitment. I'm sure – his ears might have perked up even more once Arch Manning announced his commitment to Texas. Might be a little bit more attractive than playing for Pierce Clarkson at Louisville. But
that Arch Manning commitment is going to lead to last name's Baxter out of Orlando. He's a top 50 running back. He's gotten a lot of predictions for Texas. That's going to come here soon. Trying to think of what that kid's name is. Something Baxter Jr. Yeah, you're going to see a bump here for Texas after the Arch.
Which the internet
Cedric content. Baxter Jr.
The internet content was outstanding. I really just wanted to see this Arch thing bleed out a little bit longer, because our national writers, I just love the how excited everybody gets at On3 headquarters whenever there's anything arch related. You know,
I do want to say this about Louisville. I don't know if you saw this last night, but it was reported DeAndre Moore Jr., top 100 receiver they got from California.
Yep. Second best player in the class.
He's transferring high schools to go play with Bruce Carson.
Oh, he's going to Bosco too? Of course he is.
They're going to have four players on that Bosco team. And apparently, as I was doing some digging last night, Matter Day's really got a good team too. That's the other big private high school in LA. Bryce Young, JT Daniels, they all went there. Basically, these schools, they just get kids to transfer in every year. But that's what he's doing. I mean, they're trying to build a national high school championship team. Now, is Reuben Owens on the clock? That would be my question. Is he on the clock to transfer to St. John Bosco? Like, is this what we're doing?
We're just getting kids all go to the same high school before they go to college together.
Yeah, so, like, you see what's – like, you see,
yeah.
Steve Clarkson's playing GM. Like, I mean, I don't know how else to say it other than that.
A GM for a 7-on-7 team, too.
I mean,
like, it's there's no line. It's great athletes.
I'm just very like, they're gonna have a top 25 class. I don't know, like okay. They got some kids from Georgia that's gonna be tough to hang on to. But like that, now that Moore's going to high school with Pierce Clarkson, I feel pretty good. Probably they're gonna get him. Because I thought maybe USC could maybe step on the gas there and potentially flip him. But they're gonna have a
Let's play a game. Best case scenario, worst case scenario for U of L. I think yes, in just with this class and everything. I mean, worst case scenario is pretty clear. Like, you get a 5-win Louisville team, so even a 6-win Louisville team, and Clarkson decommits, all of his boys follow suit. I think the worst case scenario is clear. But even the best case scenario of all of those guys, Owens and Moore are probably the only ones playing next year. Maybe Clarkson
has to. Well, Nick, you got to dig into Louisville's roster here. And Louisville's going to be starting 16 super seniors or regular seniors on the roster. Like, it's totally going to flip over in 2023. I think Scott Satterfield knew that. He knew he could probably win this year and survive, but next year they were really going to take it on the chin. Like, 2023 on field in the fall, they're going to take it on the chin.
Mm-hmm.
So, and he had to get a quarterback, and like, he swung and missed every class on quarterbacks.
Mm-hmm.
And so he knew what he was doing, right? Help me out, Steve.
Players here.
Take your son. Pierce Clarkson's coming in and starting right away. I mean, there's little doubt about it. And all those kids are going to play right away. But best case scenario would be, like, Louisville has a good year on the field. They're able to go and get some solid players from other regions. They build a class and they keep everybody committed. They build in at the end, they're probably a top 15 to 20 class. They're all happy, but everybody recognizes, okay, we're going to be really young next year, but we've got the future. That would be – the worst case would be – I guess it depends on what would the – that's what the question I want to know. What does it have to look like on the field for Satterfield to get fired with this recruiting class? I think the bar is pretty low myself, because if you – like, they're hook, line, and sinker right now as a fan base.
Yeah, but they're also quick to jump off the bandwagon.
Yeah, but I think this is different, Nick, because they've always been like the front running. If they got a quarterback, they're quick to forgive other stuff. Like, if you're scoring 45 points a game and you look good, they're quick to forgive other issues. And I think you could have the Pierce Clarkson sell as the next, you know, Teddy or whoever. I mean, Satterfield's already comparing him to Teddy in an interview with Eric Crawford.
Oh God, and that interview was nauseating. Well, we just want to try some new things, and you know, I asked my boys if they'd like it, and you know, like, they said, "Oh shucks, that's a good idea."
I hope this doesn't happen. What if Malik Cunningham gets an injury, he's out multiple games, they go 4-8?
See, and that's the thing though, is Louisville fans jump ship so quickly. They're quick to fall in love and then fall out of love.
They're going to be one of the more fascinating teams in college football, I think, over the next 2 years to watch.
Well, and the thing is between our worst, our 4-8s and their 9-4 this year, the truth is going to end up lying somewhere in between.
7-5 is probably my prediction.
They're going to be 7-5.
Solid team.
The kids
lose some close games.
And the kids will come in next year. I mean, Satterfield really is extending his shelf life here. Because, like you said, even if they play next year, they're not going to be good and have an impact till the following year. And I even though it's a different, it's a little bit different caliber of player, I mean, it's really quick to point to the 2014 to 2016 jump for UK. I mean, it's just, if you get the 20, it takes 2 years.
Differently.
Okay, that is true. That's the one big difference maker. And you don't have to jump as high of a bar up, too. Like, you're already a 500 team. Kentucky was going from 2 wins to 6, you know. So it's a little bit different. But for those guys to actually be good football players, takes 2 years. So I think the moral of the story is Satterfield's extending his shelf life, but we don't know if that's going to be a good shelf life or not. Like, is that can of green beans that lasts 10 years actually worth eating in year 10? You know?
What if your starch is not any themselves. Good?
Which is very well a possibility.
You know, you.
I mean,
hard to evaluate quarterbacks. Pierce Clarkson's, the ratings are all over the place. R on 3 has him as a 3-star. I believe there's another service has him as a 3-star. I believe one service maybe has him as a top 125 prospect. So he falls just outside the top 200 in our consensus rankings. So they're all over the place. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's a crapshoot. Like, you see it all the time. Ryan Helinski was a top 100 quarterback and it didn't work out at South Carolina. He came all the way across from the West Coast. So, like quarterback recruiting is a crapshoot. I think we're going to get into that here a little bit later. But, like, what if that doesn't work out? And then, you know, the guy who helped you build the roster, his son, you know, maybe you're feeling less – like, they're just – it's going to be fascinating to watch it play out. Like, it could end up being – like, a huge – like, someone could write a big oral history about how it all came together and how it all succeeded or failed or made a little documentary or something. But, yeah, they're like the story right now, I think, in college football.
And that's I know some Kentucky fans are tired of hearing about it, but that's why we're talking about it so much because it is fascinating. It's new.
It's June too.
Yeah. And it's June. but it's funny. You brought up Ryan Helinski. When Arch committed yesterday, somebody tweeted out top 2 quarterbacks to transfer and each class had one of them. And my favorite name on this list, you had your Blake Barnett's on there of the world. You know, of course, Quinn Ewers already transferred once. But my favorite one on there was Gunnar Keel from nearby Columbus, Indiana. That one, whew.
Flash we're talking pass about, there.
Yeah, who ended up playing for Eddie Grant at Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. I was like, then he went from Notre Dame to Indiana.
He had a good year there. 1 year he was at Cincinnati.
He's a big old boy. What a change. What a fall. But that happens. And, you know, and not to throw Barker under the bus or anything, but an injury certainly played a role in it. But, like, yeah, it's quarterbacks. You don't know.
Yeah. And that with Arch, I do want to say a couple things here. Like, Sarkisian's safe here for the next 4 years.
Oh, huge, huge shelf life extended.
And if he can't, you know, Texas's biggest thing is like culture, toughness. You know, hard, like committed to hard work. Like, what do you know, doing the little stuff it takes to win, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of that is line of scrimmage play and like stability on your coaching staff, you know, same message and not having too many cooks in the kitchen, which is really hard to do at Texas.
Not having monkeys attacking people.
Yeah. But getting Quinn Ewers and Arch Manning back to back for a potential 4-year run. With those guys, 2 years for each, it's very enticing. I think that's gonna that gives him a pretty big leash. And now it's up to Sark, like, to build that culture, to recruit the line of scrimmage well, to build that up. So when you have Arch Manning, you can be a legitimate national championship contender. And so that gives him a big leash. So if he can't figure that out, man, he just not you know he probably shouldn't get a head coach down
there. Right.
But overall, I wrote a post today, really just kind of diving in. Nick, the SEC, if you count Oklahoma and Texas quarterbacks that are going to play, like when the transition from the class of – since the class of 2020, there's been 14 top 100 recruits sign two SEC schools to play in the SEC. Obviously, Alabama's got four of them because they're absurd. But Tennessee signed a couple. And you've got nine of the 16 teams that have signed at least one.
And top 100 quarterbacks?
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
Kentucky's one of the seven that hasn't. Kentucky mm-hmm. hasn't signed a top 300 quarterback since Drew Barker.
Well.
I mean, it's the elephant in the room, right?
Yep.
And, you know, you Liam Cohen left after 1 year, but that did leave you hanging out to dry.
Mm-hmm.
Because now, like, you look at it, you're not signing a quarterback. Like, let's be real here.
I mean,
it's the twin. What's his name? Escaping.
Destin Wade.
Destin Wade is not going to play quarterback at Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to be like a – I think he's going to be a flex tight end.
Right.
Doesn't look like you're signing a 2023 quarterback.
Unless it's Danny O'Neill. I mean, that's kind of
– he's 2024. I'm talking about 2023.
Yeah, not going to do 2023.
Unless something happens late, coaching change where a guy comes free, and maybe they target someone. So you're all the way to 2024. And so now you're in this – like, they're in a tough spot right now, right? Like, Levis is leaving after this year. And we'll see with Bo Allen, but Kentucky's really got to nail the portal after this year. And I think what they would like is find a guy in the portal who can come in and be a 2-year starter, similar to Levis. But you're kind of – you're prisoner of the transfer portal. Just look at basketball this past year, Nick. Like, oh, I think yeah. Kentucky would have maybe liked a point guard or another shooter, and it just never happened.
The guards just stunk in the portal this year. It wasn't
– football's a little different, but you know, you're at the – you have to take what you can get there.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see. And you're hoping Scangarello evaluates it, right? Similar to Cohen with Levis. I mean, you really, all your eggs are kind of in that basket. It's a scary place to be in. Now, if you hit on that, you could be fine, because then Cutter Bowley becomes this huge target in 2025.
Mm-hmm.
He's in state. He's been on campus three times in the last year. I mean, he's blowing up, but that's a guy like, no holds bar, you have to get.
Yeah, yeah.
Your whole coaching staff has to be recruiting him. He's playing with Tim Couch's son. You need to be on the phone with the Deuce and be like, hey, we really need this kid. Like, we're going to need your help here. Mm-hmm. And you got it. Whatever NIL stuff it takes, like, that's a kid you're going to have to pull out all the stops for. You cannot miss on that kid. But in the meantime, you have to find a solid option in 2024, whether it's Danny O'Neill or not, and you got to hit a home run in the portal.
Yeah.
And they're just in kind of a dangerous spot here.
You're really hoping for a, you know, one of the four-star quarterbacks that signed with Ohio State, or, you know, one of those big time
Georgia,
guys that,
Texas,
right?
Like, you have to be careful with those guys too, because what if they weren't good enough to, you know,
Joey Gatewood, you know, yeah. Like, I mean, that's right. He was a top 50 guy, you know.
Right. So you, I mean. It's just it's a dangerous spot to be in.
Yeah,
that's all I'm saying.
And
it's got to get better. Like, it has to get better. The quarterback for Kentucky, how they've established it, it's the difference from hovering around at 500 in the SEC to be able to play in legitimate games with stakes in November, where you're actually playing for something significant and meaningful. Like, that's the difference, I think, where Kentucky is as a program. It's not having a quarterback and having a quarterback. If you got one, they can punch above their weight class. If they don't have one, they're just gonna scratch and claw and go 7-5. Especially when you go to 9 games, you're gonna go 7-5 and go to Music City Bowls. But if you had the quarterback, you can make some noise.
Well, and this isn't just you saying it. That's Mark Stoops in his talk with Kyle Tucker and their state of the program. That's exactly what he said. Like, how do you push pack? How do you get to that next level? You have to have a difference maker at quarterback.
And another thing I'm worried about, legitimately, Levis is gone after this year. Dane Key and, like, Barron Brown are true freshmen.
Mm-hmm.
What if they, like, at the peak of Key and Barron Brown's powers,
they don't have anybody?
Chris
to
Lewis.
Give them the ball.
What if they don't have the quarterback?
Like,
what if they have this awesome receiver core and they just don't have the trigger man?
It's like when Lynn Bowden in 2019. Oh, we have this great receiver. We don't have anybody to get him the ball.
This is going to be different, because I think these guys can make an average quarterback look pretty good. But if you had a real, like, NFL prospect with these guys in a good play caller scheme, like, you could really have something. But I'm worried that they might not have that. And I mean, that's a scary proposition right now.
Damn it. Like, why are you being so negative? What the hell's wrong with you?
I'm not trying to.
You're just being negative Nancy, negative Luckett.
This is where we're at right now. But I think a lot of this has to do with the coordinator churn. You know, it's 3 years in a row where you got a new offensive coordinator and you've got to recruit quarterbacks so far in advance. It's just where the Cohen stuff might not on the field, we might not see a sting at all, but this is where the real sting is going to be. Cause you really needed either in 2022 or 2023 to get a good quarterback, and they didn't. And so maybe something will happen late in the class, but their backs are against the wall kind of quarterback recruiting. They had in the portal, they have to hit a home run. I don't think there's any getting around it.
Well, now that you're all doom and gloom, let's get doom and gloom about teams that we hate.
I'm all in on the Will Levis experiment. I think this offense, you get across Chris Rodriguez in the lineup. Like, I think this offense could really be a damn powder keg this year. And hopefully that pays off significantly on the recruiting trail. It can't hurt. Like, we hear Brad White talk about all the time while we're on camp about Josh Allen. If you can sell that at quarterback, that'll help a ton too. But then that's when you get in the coordinator churn. The coaches are there that got him drafted, which is just tough.
Doom and gloom and Luckett. Athlon is the first preseason magazine to hit the stands. Phil Steele, he's bitching about his printers. I don't know if you saw any of those tweets.
This is actually hitting the shelves early. It's coming, it should be on stands before 4th of July. So,
Oh, nice. I ended up not having one at SEC Media Days last year, and I felt naked because it's, if nothing else, it's just a quick reference. You know, yeah.
It's the best. It's just a great resource guide for me during the year. You have all the spreads in there. You've got depth charts. You've got other stuff. I love it.
That's what it's best used for, is just as a reference material, because you can't always find all that stuff on the internet. Athlon's best used in they call it their scouting report, but it's basically just anonymous coaches survey. And from a Kentucky standpoint, there wasn't a whole lot of juicy, they weren't really very critical of Stoops. Defensively, they don't get recognized or anything, but they're always effective. They do a good job of keeping it in front of them in the passing game, which I thought was a nice little compliment. Not too condescending, even though some might take it as such,
Yeah, and it made me – that quote made me really kind of think, what went wrong last year for Kentucky, right? Like, if you just kind of look and you dig in, they played three quarterbacks, Nick, who had – essentially over a 50% passing success rate, which is really, really, really good. They're pretty much top 25 quarterbacks in the sport. They play three of them, or top 20 quarterbacks. And that they got lit up by all three.
And they were at their best, too. Yeah.
Will Rogers. And then Stetson Bennett played at that kind of level. I mean, he didn't throw a lot, but he had a 53.3% success rate. He had an absurd. Nearly a quarter of his passes were completions of 15 yards or more.
That's crazy.
So yeah, and half of his throws, Nick, were either first downs or touchdowns. So and the only other quarterback to get over that threshold that I have charted was C.J. Stroud, and we know the year C.J. Stroud had.
We know with those receivers,
talking about him with those receivers, right? So that's how effective and explosive they were, and so they were really gutted when you look at those games. Over 300 yards per game allowed, 11 and a half yards per attempt, which is insane. No takeaways, 8 touchdowns. And really the defense had no chance to stop either of those offenses. Or not no chance, but they gave up over 30-plus points when you did that. Now, but you look at their other Power 5 opponents, and the numbers were totally different. If you stretch it out to a full season, they gave up 216 yards per game against all other Power 5 opponents. That's about top 50. 6.5 yards per attempt, Nick, is top 15 in the country. 7 interceptions in 7 games, that interception rate would rank top 15 in the country. So really the pass defense we were used to, we saw in the other 7 Power 5 games.
Yeah, they just got gutted in those three games.
They just got exposed.
Especially at Tennessee. That one really
in the other games.
Messes with the averages. Yeah, because they went from first in the SEC in pass defense, just in raw yards per game allowed, all the way to eighth year over year.
So if you think Kentucky is going to be what we think they could be on offense, which I think with all the pieces is a potential top 10 offense. But let's say they fall a little short of that, but they're still, let's say they're averaging 30 points a game. They're really balanced run and pass. They remain good in the red zone. And they improve on their turnovers. Then, like, if you play like Kentucky does in a live possession game and you're scoring over 30 points a game, it's going to be very hard to win unless the team you're playing just gets a bunch of explosive plays. And so they were really able to eliminate that other than those elite quarterbacks. Now, they're going to play those guys again. You know, Bennett, Hooker, Rodgers are all on the schedule. And when you use that 50% success rate threshold, Spencer Rattler was up there both 2 years at Oklahoma. But other than that, I don't think there's really a quarterback that potentially scares you on that. Like Anthony Richardson, I don't know. I don't think he's going to be that type of efficiency level. It's going to be a lot of eliminating big plays against him. Ole Miss, you looked at Corral, was under that threshold last year, and I've talked about how not great the quarterbacks looked at Ole Miss during the spring. So I think the schedule sets up pretty well. Like if that's the formula, and if these other teams are playing aren't able to produce the chunk plays, then it just comes down to those four games, I think. South Carolina, Tennessee, Mississippi State, and Georgia. And two of those games are the two biggest ones on the schedule. You know, if you take out the Georgia game, the Mississippi State South Carolina game, Nick, to get where Kentucky wants to get to, that's a game you just can't lose. Those two games you have to win.
Yeah, and that's, I don't want to say that's become the norm, because it has, but it hasn't. At home, that has be, in order to have a great season, you have to do those things at home. So it's not a just tell me something I don't know, but that's how you climb the ladder. That's how you climb the ladders. You take care of business against those teams. Against also, we got to let the listeners know too on our kind of an inside joke, but Mr. Podcaster, Shane Beamer. Do we have an official nickname for him? Is it just Mr. Podcaster?
I said Mr. Podcast. I don't.
This dude, he does. I feel more like no one's talking about
this
did.
But us. But like, this is the biggest media honk in college football.
Yeah, it's bad.
I mean, if Nick is
slurping,
if I fired off a tweet right now, like if I said Shane Beamer is faker than Jesse Gemstone, I would get blasted by 800 national media members. And I don't believe that, but like that's just he's just got a lot of friends in the media, and like that's where all this hype for them is coming from. It's just been fascinating to watch. And he goes on every podcast. If you're into the college football podcast space at all, just search Shane Beamer in your Spotify app or your Apple podcast app.
See how many
podcasts he's going on.
It's crazy.
Been on with Big Game Boomer. He's been on with Reddit.
He's been on
with every regional SEC podcast you could think of.
Oh, man.
Plus all the national stuff and the local South Carolina pods.
Oh, and my favorite was when
this would be like no bad, like Big Blue Drew does the dad pod, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Not crapping on Big Blue Drew at all. But this would be like Mark Stoops going on the dad pod with Big Blue Drew.
With his dad, though. That's what's even crazier is that Shane and Frank. The guy who does Gamecock Central, it's on 3Site, Mike Uva. I don't know how to pronounce that, but he had Frank and Shane on a Zoom to talk about dad, wife, and love. And I just want to know who came up with that idea for Father's Day. I could easily see Shane pitching it to him, being like, "I've got this great idea. People are going to love it." I mean, it's just, yeah, we're anytime we see Shane Beamer on our Twitter feed, it's about a podcast. You can bet your sweet buns, our eyes are rolling at Mr. Podcast, the South Carolina head podcaster. He went from the old ball coach to the new podcaster.
I know it's
it's crazy.
It's been a while. I mean, you got to—he's a salesman for sure.
Oh, he's doing it. They love AJ, that in South Carolina.
Couldn't you see, like, Shane Beamer? He would just be, like, selling cars or insurance or something.
He is definitely the guy that you take to the meeting to close to like be good with clients, you know. Mm-hmm. He goes to all the conventions and smooth stalks them.
Yeah,
takes him out. He knows the local spot where they'll have a good time after the convention. I mean, that's Shane Beamer. He's Mr. Personality, Mr. Lovable Guy. We can't say the same thing about Satterfield because in that Athlon magazine, they also had stuff on UK's opponents, their rivals. And the stuff on Satterfield was golden. pretty much every person they talked to was like, yeah, we expect this job to be open this year. And we were kind of surprised that he still has it, which goes. And that's where it's even more fascinating with all the recruiting stuff, because I'm sure these coaches were talked to before the recruiting thing happened. But I mean, these are guys in their league that are expecting Satterfield's job to be open. And
I want to read something right here, Nick. This one's what stood out to me.
Okay. It might be the one I've got too. So I'm anxious to hear which one you pick.
Probably the thing that jumps out most is how they've worked the portal in both directions and how different that is from what Scott came from at App. Even as a G5, they had a system of developing guys, building a very specific culture. In the last few years, it seems that they're always scrambling to rebuild that roster and define themselves. And now you jump into now recruiting, like he's doing a total 180 of what they've done in the past. Like total, like how he built App and that model, that blueprint is not at all what he's doing right now.
Man, it's
and you go and look, I looked up some introductory press conference quotes from him this week, and he talked about his recruiting philosophy. He's like, we're not going to go out east or out west. We're going to stick in our region. We're going to go to North Carolina and Georgia, and we're going to find – and locally, and we're going to really invite these high school coaches. We're going to have great relationship with these high school coaches. The doors are open. Doors are not closed at Louisville anymore. You all come here, talk to us, and we're going to recruit your kids, and we're going to go down to Georgia and North Carolina, and we're going to get kids.
And he's they're not the opposite.
Doing any of that. So that really – that stuck to me. Like – he had like the culture and the app and the model. They've totally gotten away from that.
Well, and that goes into the statement that I had pulled, which was, I think the school and head coach figured out they're not agreeing with each other a while ago.
Next sentence.
You know, like there hasn't been a way to create the break yet. And the issues of the school have bought some time. Yeah. And
yeah.
Unless they surprise a lot of people, this feels like the end. So who knows? Satterfield might have done enough surprising, but it is a bizarre situation down there on Floyd Street.
Fascinating, most fascinating team in college football this year. Over the next 2 years, I think, is Louisville. Let's see what that looks like. And again, the schedule is ridiculously tricky for them this year. And if they have, you know, injury bug bites, they could be in trouble.
Right. I also just love that there was some coach who just said, talking about Tennessee, pretty easy to break down because that offense is easy to break down. You're a 6-win team if your quarterback is decent, and you've got a 2 or 3 game ceiling if he can make plays. Like, just a hilarious evaluation of the University of Tennessee, but also kind of true. I mean,
I'm very interested to see how teams defend them this year now that the tape's out.
Right.
The kind of Art Briles offense, Nick, this kind of super space, veer and shoot, typically quarterbacks in that offense are not very efficient. Typically the completion rate is low. Typically the success rate is pretty low, but they're hitting a bunch of chunk plays.
Yeah.
The anomaly with that offense last year is that Hooker was just really efficient. He had a high completion rate. He had a success rate over 52%.
He was a good rusher, too. Plays. Right.
Yeah, plus the run element from QB. I'd be surprised if he hits those numbers again. Like, just this offense and how it's based, that's just hard to hit. And I think teams are going to be better suited to defend them in the league.
Not only schematically, but just from a personnel standpoint, the teams they're playing have seen it now. Yeah. And they've also seen it against better receivers. I know Valus Jones is one of the guys they lost. I don't have my Phil Steele yet to rattle all the names off.
They got Cedric Tillman back, and he'll be first team preseason all SEC. He'll be a dude outside. Jalen Hyatt's a guy that was a big recruit for them. They recruited well in the 2022 class with receiver. You know, it's a system. They're going to put up numbers. I'm not really too worried about who they have on the outside on the perimeter. But I'm very interested to see I think they caught a lot of people by surprise last year. Mm-hmm. With how good and efficient Hooker was. Because we remember what this offense looked like with Joe Milton.
Yeah.
You know, we remember if you can't hit the deep shots, you're in a world of hurt because you're going to be in behind the chains.
Right. Right. Right.
And then you can't get into your tempo if you're not moving the ball.
Man, so, I would have loved to see.
I think some of that's sour grapes from the coaches, but at the other time, I think they're going to be better suited to defend, especially after all these crooked numbers they hung on people last year.
Oh, yeah. I think
some people are going to be fired up
to get
back at them.
And it would be a real shame if we had to watch a lot of Joe Milton football this fall. That guy, I really wanted to see him throw it out of the end zone when we were down there in Athens watching that the garbage game versus Ole Miss.
And the fascinating thing with Heupel at UCF, his best year was his first year, and then he dipped.
Yep, each year
his team
slowly got worse.
And mainly it was the defense kind of falling off slowly. Does that happen the same at Tennessee? That's what I'm very, mm-hmm. very interested to see. But you got to give him credit. He found Hooker. Well, he didn't find Hooker. He inherited him. And it ended up working out. I mean, it was a great break
mm-hmm.
for them.
Well, speaking of breaks, it's time for us to take a little break. And we might be breaking longer than normal. I know we have a couple announcements coming up 4th of July weekend. But things are going to be pretty slow up until SEC Media Days. And it's going to be a pop. So that's right around the corner. How are we feeling right now with a couple weeks to go?
We're feeling good. Wife Taylor is ready for that kid to
get out of her
stomach.
Yeah. Has it sunk in?
Real? Yeah. I think it feels real, but it's still like, it won't be like real, real until it, you know, it's
3 a.m. and baby's crying.
Right. I'm sure I'm in the room. I might have a mini panic attack when it's about to happen. But yeah, it's pretty crazy. It's flown by. I'm not going to lie. It's flown by.
Yeah. Man. Well, we're excited for y'all. Cheering you on, cheering Taylor on. You're doing all the hard work anyway. I mean, so don't let her take up too much praise. You're doing all the hard work. But just as a forewarning to our listeners, if we don't get another pod in for a while, that's why. It's got a dad around.
Unlike the University of Florida head football coach, I will not be writing an apology letter to 11 Personnel Nation.
Oh man,
not for missing some podcast time.
Thank you because I had it written down and just glossed over it. Folks, Billy Napier's he's out of here in 2 years. You can't like this is. Holy crap. You're doing an open letter to fans before even coaching a game. You do that as like a last, this is the, I equated it to the players only meeting. This is the last ditch effort you do to save face. And he's doing it halfway through a summer of recruiting. What are you doing, Billy? He's in over his head, man.
The whole thing with Napier was we're hiring him and getting rid of Mullen. We're getting rid of a top line elite X and O guy. Because we want to recruit top 100 players like Georgia and A&M and Alabama are doing. And he's not doing it. Really, the big one is Jaden Rashada, quarterback from the Bay Area out in California. Florida got him on campus a couple weeks ago, made a big move. They were in the lead. It looked like they were going to get his commitment. He had a commitment. I think he was supposed to commit earlier this week.
Yeah.
And He pushed it back. Mario Cristobal in Miami made a move. He's at Miami right now. Their big week, like we just talked about earlier. And he's got, like, predictions are coming in for Miami. He's going to commit to Miami. Florida's going to miss for the second class in a row. They're going to miss out on a quarterback. Last year, they had Nick Evers committed. Mullen gets fired. He flips, and he's at Oklahoma right now. And so it'd be 2 years in a row where they missed out on quarterback. You look at other areas. They're still not recruiting in-state, getting a lot of kids very well. You know, it's just, I mean, it's not looking great for him. And you go on a Florida message board right now, and it's just heated. And it's different down there, Nick, like, than it is here. Like, football recruiting is huge.
It's the lifeblood.
Yeah, it's huge down there, you know, and they don't – and it just – like, Florida, they just feel like they're very, very behind. And yeah, they're, he's got job pressure on him already, and he's had to cut scholarships, Nick. I don't know if you saw that earlier this week. Like, Florida was over the 85, so he had to cut three players. Like, now, in June. I don't know why he waited that long. But yeah, he had, they had to cut to get down to 85. And if you dig into Napier, he missed on a lot of hires. He missed on some guys he really wanted. Most notably, Jim Knowles was number one defense coordinator. He's at Ohio State now, and he missed on a few more hires, as well. So very interested year. And you look at them, interesting team, Nick. Utah, Kentucky at home, back to back at night in the swamp to start the year.
That's the start to the season.
I mean, that could be – Utah and Kentucky could be two top 15 teams you have to start your season with a new coaching staff, you know, a new scheme, all of that.
It'd be a lot on Anthony Richardson's shoulders. He's going to have to do a lot.
And for Kentucky, like, you really – like, for Kentucky to get where they get, I think just if you can split Florida, Ole Miss, those road trips in September, and to get that in October – two-game slate with South Carolina, Mississippi State. If you can be 4-1, 1-1 in the league, I think you would take – I would sign up for that right now.
I would rather be 5-0.
But if you get 5-0, 2-0, you're really – you're cooking with grease. I mean, you could really get to that – you can get to that by 7 – I mean, you could get to by 7-0, 4-0, going to Tennessee on Halloween weekend undefeated.
Could be a doozy.
Yeah.
Could be a doozy.
Regardless, you have to win – I think you got to win 3 of your 4 road games, potentially. And then clean slate at home, but you got to win it, or that would be the goal, but you got to win at least 2 of those road games. And if you get 2 right, I mean, you get 2 early.
Yeah.
Usually fare better early in the year on the road than they have in the middle of the year in October.
And there's also something too about that Florida game, the symbolism there. It's something about that rotating SEC West team. It doesn't hit the fan base quite like, and even when you lose at Mississippi State, those losses don't the impact of the win and the loss to the Western opponents doesn't matter as much as your Eastern ones because you're playing them every year. And in Florida's case,
it's his history.
And there's a symbolism too to beating them back to back years and then 3 out of your last 5. I think that would be like that. You can say that you've moved ahead of them in the pecking order if you can accomplish that goal.
Any Kentucky fan from the ages of 27 to 60
is just
the large chunk of their fan base and even their most memorable years, they just watched Florida kick Kentucky's face in.
Yeah, by 50 points.
And now you got a chance to beat them for the third time in 5 years. Yeah, third time in 5 years.
Well, they
second
had
time down there.
3 or 4 different head coaches during Stoops' tenure. Is it 3 or 4?
Oh, they had Muschamp. McElwain.
Yeah, Muschamp was – yeah, so 4. Neighbor. Yeah. I mean
– Muschamp the first 2 years, and he got fired in 2014.
Wow. Whew. How the times have changed. But that was like I found out, and it just dawned on me the other day, when Maurice Claret was at the UK football facility.
Yeah, I remember freshman year. Like, that was
kids.
Like – every week I was watching him.
Felt like. Half the kids weren't alive when he was doing that back in 02, which is just remarkable in my brain. But I wrote it in the post, but he was – I know we're supposed to hate Ohio State for whatever reason in the state of Kentucky, but he was the first college football player outside of a Kentucky football player that I was just like, oh, my gosh, this guy's awesome. I want to watch him as much as I can. Like, I was cheering for them over Miami. You know, I was anti-U. You know, I was going for the sweater vest. And Maurice Claret, like that they were so much fun to watch.
Arch Manning was in second grade when Johnny Manziel had his Heisman season.
Oh man, pretty sure the quarterback for that Ohio State team is from my wife's hometown, right? Was that was it Krenzel?
Yeah, well, because it was the year they won the title.
Pretty sure Krenzel is a St. Henry native.
2K Craig with a K.
Yeah, pretty. It's either Krenzel or there's another. No. I'm thinking Swick? I'm thinking of the national championship guy when they had Ginn and they lost. who is that quarterback? He was just so-so as well. But, dude, whenever we go to the St. Henry Alumni Softball Tournament, dude is just smashing home runs. You know? Like, see, and that's what I want to be. I don't even need to be the athlete good enough to go play in the national championship. Just make me good enough to be on the awesome team and then just kick ass and all the adult stuff. And that's what that guy does. And I can't remember his name. He was he lost the title game, but was still good enough to be there.
Was it the 07 team that lost LSU? Because Troy Smith was 06. It had to be whoever the quarterback was that next year.
It was the year after.
I can't remember who that was.
I'm looking it up because it's
going to kill me. 2007 Ohio State football reference.
It's going to kill me, and it is here we go. Todd Beckman. There we go. Yeah, Beckman. Yep, he started for 2 years. Beckman is he's still a stud athlete 15 years later. Gosh, we made everybody feel old today.
And I'm the world trips this year, Nick. We got a good Kentucky turnout at Georgia
last year. That was great. Ole Miss
time going to the Grove in over a decade. I feel like there's going to be a lot. I've talked to some people. I know a lot of people going already. That's going to be a fun. Friday night in whatever their little district's called, I can't remember what it's called down there. That's going to be a fun night.
Well, and then Tennessee, if you mentioned that scenario earlier, there's going to be a ton. I mean, you can get tickets to Tennessee games.
That, 100,000 seat stadium, right?
There's going to be a lot of blue that gets in there. So, a lot of potential.
Mm-hmm. And everything is with, like, sneaky thing about Oxford, it's a 6-hour drive from Louisville.
Yeah.
Like, you talk about, like, the South Carolina trips, usually the 6 hours is the weekend trip. Like, that's – you it's can doable. Make that. Yeah, it's not that bad. Like, South Carolina and Georgia, the bad thing about those is, it's like, it leaks into that 7.5-hour range from Louisville, at least. And that makes it kind of a pain in the rear. But that 6 hours, you can get it done pretty easy. And that's going to be a fun – and it's a perfect time of year, really.
Right.
It should be cooling off just a little bit there at 1st of October. So yeah, it's gonna be a fun year.
Man, love it, absolutely love it. Well, I've loved doing this podcast. Like it, we said let's do a quick one, and here an hour later we're still yammering on.
It happens.
It's what off season, Josh Pate. but we've had a good time, and might be taking a brief break. But hey,
we should get one. We'll probably get one more in.
Yeah, I have. It'll probably be after the holiday weekend, though. We'll wait for some reaction to the announcements and stuff.
Right.
But we'll tentatively plan for a post-independence holiday. Stay safe out there. Enjoy the summer, folks. And go Cats. Go Kroger.